Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Thanks for being part of my day. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, thank you especially for that. We consider that a sign of high intelligence. Judith Glaser is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Judith is a member of our Brain Trust, a great lady, a very smart lady. She is the author of The DNA of Leadership and also Creating We. She was named one of the best business, which is Creating We, by the way, was named one of the best business books of 2005 and by Business Book Review. And as you know, folks, no chopped liver on the Small Business Advocate Show, only the best for my audience. Judith, welcome back to the show.
It's so great to be back. And I have good news about my second book.
Tell us about it.
The second book did the same thing. It was on Forbes Business Book Review and Amazon's Best Seller List of 2006.
Congratulations. The DNA of Leadership, folks, the cream just keeps rising to the top. Congratulations,
Judith. You have a way with words. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm not the least bit surprised, Judith.
Yeah. It's what's been fascinating is to go on the road and talk to I'm out here in Charlotte right now, and then I'm going to California, but to talk to leaders about the connection between DNA of leadership and innovation and engagement. How do you create environments? You know, if the thesis behind the DNA is that our DNA is actually malleable, even though we think it's not, that it's encoded to be impacted by the environment, and the environment is your conversational environment and your psychological mm-hmm. environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so engagement, you know, how do you create environments where people are engaging with each other and really triggering each other's capacities? That's what this is all about.
Well, and that's where the leadership comes in, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The question is, what kind of leadership? What's the nature of leadership that makes a difference in people's nature? If you can think of that as a kind of a double entendre.
I think it's an excellent point, and leadership is something I contemplate quite mm-hmm. a bit, one of my mentors once said, a lot of people want to be leaders, but mm-hmm. everybody can't get others to follow them.
Right.
And I thought that was an important thing to say. You know, you might want to be a leader, but leaders are the kind of people that that other people want to follow. Now, what makes someone be that kind of a person? What are some of those qualities, Judith?
Well, let me take the phrase that you just said and break it into two parts. One part is that if a leader looks behind them and says, "I'm a good leader because people are following me," then the question is, are they really creating leaders out of the people that they're working with and they're leading? So I raise that as the biggest question for leaders. If our measure of our success is that people are following me, am I really creating leaders out of the people that I work with?
Right.
And so I break down the leadership questions to two parts. One is that it's great to learn from people who are leaders. And so if we follow somebody because we're learning from them about what good leadership is, that's a good reason to follow. However, there's a second part of this, and that is that leaders' jobs, you know, when the work is done, the people who are working with the leader should say, "Wow, this is so great, we did it ourselves." In other words, they should feel the leader should be creating environments where everybody steps up to be a leader or learns how to become a leader and can take on leadership themselves. And so the leader-follower concept, in my mind, is a little bit of the old world, and the new world is how to build a sense of fellowship inside of our organizations so people learn how to work with each other, and in that working with each other, leadership is shared amongst everyone.
So you're saying that 21st century leaders should not just be people who lead, but should be people who are growing leaders.
Exactly. One of the leadership genes is developing others. It's about helping people learn how to express their voice. That is the most important thing a leader needs to focus on, is how do you create environments, teams, organizations, relationships, where people learn how to have a voice that has some significance. that's what every person's DNA is all about.
I've identified what I call the three laws of aggregation, Blasting Game's three laws of aggregation. One of those laws of aggregation is that you find your success by aggregating the success of others, and that's what you were just talking about.
Absolutely. And when people can tap, when you can help somebody tap into their potential, not just what they're doing now, but something that they have inside that they haven't yet understood how to bring into the world, you are setting a person on fire for life. You know,
right.
Any one great experience with working with someone that teaches them how to step out of who they are into who they can become.
I like what you just said about setting someone on fire for life. I want to get Judith to spend a little more time on that. Folks, this could be the low-hanging fruit that allows your business to leap off the ground into the next level, this stuff that Judith's talking about. Judith Glazer and I will be right back. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me. We're back. It's 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Judith Glazer. She's the author of the award-winning book, The DNA of Leadership, her second award-winning book. We're not the least bit surprised about that. Judith, you said something when we went to the break. We're talking about leadership, folks, and how leadership should manifest, what it should look like, what it should become, what it should turn into, what should be the product. What should be the fruit of leadership? And Judith, when we went to the break, you were talking about, you used the term unlocking someone for life. And I really like the way you said that. And in my opinion, if you really want to be a true leader, you'll find people who work with you, who are around you, and you'll find a way to do that. And you know, leaders, one of the things that I think a highly successful leader has to do is not be concerned about the credit.
Uh-huh.
Let your people go. Let them become what they can be. Help them to do that. And take credit for their success, not for your success. And that, to me, that's the essence of what I call my law of aggregation. But talk to us about how to unlock these people for life.
Well, it's amazing. A real leader looks at people and sees potential inside of them, not just the actual. And I say that because every human being growing up, we all have things that we do well and things that we don't do so well. But that's because a lot of that has to do with how we even see ourselves. Can we take the risk? Can we leap forward? A lot of us have fear about that for whatever reason, whether it's how we were reinforced growing up or just experiences. And a leader's job is to help us down-regulate the fear. In other words, minimize the fear in our life about ourselves and maximize or up-regulate the good things that can come out of us as a result. So there was this boy who became a stutterer. I'll give you an example. And he was a twin. His sister had water on the brain. And when he was little, his mother focused mostly on the ill child, not on him. And he used to push the carriage with his mother and all those kinds of things. He sort of became an it. And he developed the stuttering. And all the way through school, he was a stutterer. And most teachers looked at him and said, well, you know, he's got a problem. They start to label him as a stutterer. It made him feel worse and become a little bit introverted. And all the way through school, even though he was sort of smart, he had that horrible label on him. And he had one teacher in high school who looked at him and said, wow, I listened to him talk. Even through the stuttering, I can hear a really smart person. She didn't see the label. She saw the person and the potential inside. And she said, I'm going to make him I see he's got this talent for just constructing things differently than other people. She saw as different and better, not as different and worse. She said, I'm going to make him a lead in the play. And she said to him, I want you to be a lead in this play. And he said, but I can't talk. I mean, he really had a serious stutter. And she convinced him to do it. And he learned his lines. And when he stood up on the stage to do his performance, his stuttering disappeared. He stepped into a role, and his stuttering disappeared. And what's fascinating about that is that she so believed in him that she encouraged him to do this. The rest of his life was changed. It unlocked him for life. He became a valedictorian of his class. He became the head of the drama group in his university. But bigger than that, and they found out he was deaf in one ear and he had polio. that he went on and taught himself 7 languages. He went to the government and he said, I want to bring dentistry around the world, because he became a dentist. And the government said, that's the most wonderful thing. We will do that. He went around the world. He ended up going to 18 countries, starting dental schools, and getting 180 plaques for his speaking, which he did in different languages. This person was unlocked for life.
And what do you think will happen as a result of what happened to that young man?
I know that story intimately, because that's my father.
Wow.
And I got to see his life robust. I mean, he truly, language, he was, the confidence that came out of what the teacher did for him gave him the ability to take dentistry around the world, to go to the State Department and say, I want to do that, and have the State Department support him, and to learn 7 languages, self-taught, and to be able to go around the world and teach dentistry, or bring dentistry to foreign countries and put them in the universities. He had 180 plaques for his speaking engagement. If that isn't unlocking. Hmm?
180. And all because somebody took the time to care about him and look at him differently.
To see through the label, that's what I wondered. I think that's what happens, is that we label people in so many ways, and once we label people, we treat them according to the label. And stuttering was like a taboo. It was like, if you stutter, you can't be smart. And the teacher lifted the label, and that's the unlocking part, that we have to really take a look at the way we label people. We label them and we minimize them. Hmm. And the leaders that are the most extraordinary lift the labels and see through into the eyes of a person. All of us want to grow, and all of us want to know what we want to become. Some people know their purpose early in life. Most of us don't.
Judy, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 10:10. When we come back, I want to talk to Judy about something called redemption. How big a deal is redemption in the DNA of leadership? Stay with us. I'm nationwide. We're back. It's 7:00. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us today. Judith Glaser is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's the author of The DNA of Leadership, also Creating We. And both of those books are award-winning books. Judith, tell us where those books are available.
The books are available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, all the major bookstores, and they can visit my website. And there's a picture of the book on the left side. Just click right onto that picture, and it'll take you where you need to go to buy. That website is www.creatingwe.com. That's the name of the first book, Creating We, that's W-E.com.
Check it out when you get a chance, folks, and I certainly encourage you to find out anything that Judith is doing. You won't be sorry about that. You'll be very happy that you did. Judith, one of the things that I heard when you told just the story about your father, someone redeemed him.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, he was a, I don't want to say he was a lost soul, but he was a damaged soul, wasn't he? He had some damage, some baggage. Life had been kind of rough on him, and somebody saw what was possible in him, and they redeemed him, and they gave him new life, and they set him on, as you said, they set him free. I think one of the most important things that any leader can do, any business manager can do, is to, when they see an employee, for example, who's underperforming, who's not getting the job done, I think we should put the pressure back on ourselves and say, okay, what have I done wrong? Maybe I've hired the wrong person. In that case, I need to do something about that. But first, maybe I've not done the right job of managing this person, or maybe the way I look at this person isn't the way this person needs to be looked at. And as if I'm a leader, I've got to find, I think I need to look at how I can redeem that person and see if they can be redeemed. Now, everybody can't be redeemed. There are people who just need to go do something else. But if possible, I think it's easy, Judith, to fire somebody. That doesn't take much of a leader.
No, it's a knee-jerk reaction.
Redemption takes leadership.
Yep. And you're stepping into a really important place for leaders to understand. First of all, when we hire people, we have like 20 people, 30 people, how many show up for the interviews, and we pick what we think is the best person. But then a leader makes the assumption that gives them the problem or causes them trouble, which is that person is going to fit into this job and do 100% of what I want them to do 100% of the time, and I'm going to be happy because they're going to be successful and they're going to make me successful. And that is a faulty way of thinking, because based on an interview of 3 hours or 2 hours or 1 hour, for us to be able to size up a person and say they're going to perfectly fit into the job is it's a misunderstanding of how this stuff works, okay? So we go in expecting 100%, and as soon as we see a person not performing to the 100%, we start to think that they're not good people. And again, it goes back to that cycle of labeling. So the first thing that a leader has to understand is that no one's going to be 100% all the time, no matter how good the interview was or how good they were. So between what you expected of that person and how they're actually performing is the most wonderful place to harvest a person's talent. If the leader is able to, what you call, redeem themselves and step into that place with a person and say, I need to invest in your development to get you to be that aspiration that I had for you and to keep you up there 100%. And most leaders are afraid to make that investment. They'd rather say, hey, I expect you to do it. You didn't do it. Let me just tell you, you're not good enough and you don't get your bonus this year. That's a knee jerk, and it doesn't require putting skin in the game.
And that's when you make your management process all about you. That's the opposite of aggregation.
Right.
That's the opposite of all the things that you're talking about.
It's exactly right. It is all about you, and it's all about you looking good as a leader because you've picked the right person to get your game plan in place. Now, should leaders, you know, I mentioned also that we have a little bit of a selfish gene inside. And when leaders become really successful, sometimes that selfish gene takes over. And we see it in the form of egocentricity, where it's all about me, it's all about me. And I have to have people around me that make me look good. And the people that don't, I'm going to make sure that, you know, that I either move them away or send them to a different place or whatever. And the skin in the game part is what you're talking about. I think that's redemption. I think where the leader says, there's a wonderful clip in the movie All That Jazz where Roy Scheider has three people on the stage, and two of them, Candy and Casey, are doing really well. And he says, you know, Victoria, I need to talk to you. And he embarrasses the heck out of her in front of everybody because she hasn't been performing up to his expectations. And it breaks her down, and she goes over to the bar, and she starts to cry. And she said, I look in the mirror, and I can't stand the way I look. I know I'm awful. You know, she's so honest with him. And he says to her, look, I don't know if I can make you great. I don't know if I can make you good, but I really know I can make you better. And I want to do it. And that's where redemption plays out in real life.
Judith Glaser, thank you, Judith, for that wisdom, and we appreciate your time as always. Looking forward to our next visit already. Thank you, Judy, for being here. Good job today.
Thank you so much.
Gotta go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.